feeling cold, and I'm almost always tired. And I have felt this thing of the flames in all of her life.
An extended hiatus for the Purple Ooh. Dinosaur podcast.
Ooh,
we earned it.
How'd you people feel? Terrified?
I didn't really know what to do with my life, so I can only imagine what other people had no idea how to do with their lives.
Big challenge to make it through a holiday weekend without the two of us yapping on like morons. Hey, hi, Anthony.
Oh, hi, Tyler.
How's things?
Oh, things are thingy. I'm getting ready to go to Cincinnati for the All-Star game.
That ending that with for the All-Star game made it acceptable, but if you were just like, I'm getting ready to go to Cincinnati,
go to Cincinnati,
be like, what?
Because
what's wrong
I
with
hate
you?
Myself.
That should be fun, though. It's we're closing in on All-Star festivities. The Futures game comes up Sunday. All-Star game Tuesday, right?
Yes, Tuesday, correct.
And the AAA All-Star game and AA All-Star game, I believe, are Wednesday.
Yeah, when there's nothing else going on.
Yeah,
in the world of sports, which is a great time to have that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, welcome in. It's episode number 51.
Goodness.
Of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I am Tyler Mon. He is Anthony Masterson. And who are our contenders to represent? Well, first of all, we have to let you know we were brought in today by the band Doves and Wolves. And that song submitted today is called Arkansas. Denver band is Doves and Wolves. You can find out more for them, dovesandwolves.com. And big thanks to those guys for sending in some music today. It was our good pal Adam Peterson who hooked us up again with Adam Peterson was last week. This week, Daniel Notary hooked us up with the song and the band Doves and Wolves. So big thanks to those guys.
Yeah, episode 51. Get out of here.
Yeah, get out of here.
Jeez.
Actually, I think I should easily be able to edit that out. But if not, then this will be hilarious to just leave this in us talking trash about you, Adam Peterson, for not sending this into us.
Even
what do
sends,
we got? Episode number.
He sent us stuff like every week.
Episode number 51 today. What do we got?
I gotta say, it's not a great list, though it is extensive. We got Brooks Brown from the last 2 years. Matt Reynolds wore it the longest, 2010 to 2012, the lefty, now in the D-backs organization, I still believe. Josh Fogg in 2009 only, not in his Dragon Slayer year. Luis Vizcaino, Juan Murillo, who we mentioned on the last podcast, I believe.
Fireballing
Juan Murillo. Sunwoo Kim, Aquilino Lopez, Alan Simpson, Joe Roa, Randy Flores, Rick White, Craig Dingman, David Lee, Luther Hackman, and 1997 Pedro Astacio.
Wow. Post-trade, yeah. Immediately post-trade Pedro Astacio.
It is not a
Holy
promising
cow.
List for number 51 on the PDP.
There are like 17 guys in that list who I have never heard of in my life.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's Dingman? Craig Dingman?
Craig Dingman. David Lee, who I think just got traded to the Knicks.
You're right. For the second go-round with the Knicks, right?
Yeah.
Sonny Kim, by the way, was like the Rockies had him and Byung-Hyun Kim at the same time.
That's right.
And they were both just terrible. I believe
they were
not great. I don't think the Rockies have had any other Korean players.
Correct
me if I'm wrong.
I can check that really quick while you just kind of make some stuff
Sunny,
up here on the
well,
spot.
Well, I just tap dance. Sunny Kim went Sunny Dance.
Sunny Dance
Kim went,
went
5-1 with a 4.22 ERA and 12 appearances, 8 starts in 2005 after being acquired from the Washington Nationals. Then the next year, 6 games, a 19.29 ERA.
All right.
7 innings, 17 hits, 15 runs, all of them earned. He walked 8, he struck out 4. He somehow only gave up 2 home runs, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And
Byung-Hyun Kim and Sunwoo Kim, the only 2 Koreans ever in Rockies history.
And they were concurrent. That is so weird.
Yeah. Kim was 05 to 07. Sunwoo was 05 to 06.
How strange.
How about that?
Very weird.
Who do we go with here?
I know.
In terms of like players who were decent, Matt Reynolds was decent.
Yeah, Matt Reynolds wasn't too bad.
In three seasons, a 358 ERA.
Yeah, like I don't know.
Or
who
393
else
with the Rockies.
You know who was an underrated good pitcher for the Colorado Rockies? was Rick White. Rick White was he was solid.
Yeah.
He's not at all solid. A 2-6 record and a 6.20 ERA. There are not a whole lot of real winning choices there. No. Alan Simpson, I remember being fairly decent.
Is that true, or are you making that up?
No, I think he actually was.
2 years, 2-1, 6.13 ERA.
No, he was not. You know what's funny is like, so he would have been on the team.
39 2/3. That's fine.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not he would have been on the team when I was 19 and 20. And I think that was just the prism that you viewed it through. It was like, an ERA of 6, it's not bad. It's not bad on this team, you know? Right, Maya, that's kind of a winning, that's a winning step forward. Wow, this is a whole lot of
crap.
Real garbage on this team.
It's a whole lot of crap on this team.
Luis Vizcaino, not good. 1-2 record of 5.28 ERA.
Honestly, man, Brooks Brown's been the best player on the bunch, I think. We got to go with the current Rocky. I think we got to go to Brooks Brown.
Let's go Brooks Brown.
Randy Come on Flores. Down.
I barely even remember when Randy Flores was on this team.
Hey, 52 appearances, 3.28 ERA in his career for the Rockies for Brooks Brown, even though he's on the DL now. Whatever. I call it Brooks Brown.
Randy Flores pitched in 82 games for the Rockies.
2002?
I would never have. Well, not the first go-round. 2002 when he was number 51, a 9.53 ERA in 8 games. But then in 2009 and 2010, he made a combined, what would that be, 71
9.53 ERA. Oy.
That is insane. 74
good,
good
appearances,
God. Actually.
Good God, you guys. We're taking way too long talking about this because this is just ridiculous.
I know.
It's
I don't
so
know.
Because
this is just, we can't even make a choice. These are all so terrible. Let's go with Luther Hackman because I've never heard of him. Let's go Luther Hackman or Craig Dingman. I feel like those are two very fitting choices. Why not? Let's just go
with Luther Hackman. 1 year with the Rockies. 1-2 record, a 10.69 ERA. Screw it. Luther Hackman.
Oh,
come on
boy.
Down. I'm doing it.
The Luther Hackman.
Luther Hackman. Edition. Made his debut in 99 for the team.
Craig Dingman, by the way, 7 games in 2001, a 13.50 ERA. So, a lot of good choices. A lot of good choices. They only get worse
then,
from
then, of
here,
course,
really.
Hackman went to the Cardinals afterwards and cut his ERA in more than half. So, yeah.
Yikes.
Shocker there.
Yikes.
All right, Luther Hackman.
So, hey.
Sixth-round pick in 1994 by the Rockies.
Welcome into the Luther Hackman Memorial Edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. We've spent 10 minutes talking about guys like Luther Hackman and Craig Dingman.
I wonder if, that's
Kim.
Because the Rockies have been 4-9 since we last spoke about them.
They're just sad about us. Like, oh, man, what happened to the PDP?
I
can't even believe it.
I get it. I get that. They did win last night, though.
They're
that
sad about
nice
that.
Them.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty decent game last night. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do for pitching for the rest of the week. Or
I have one
but,
option.
Yeah? Who's that?
His name rhymes with Gon Jay.
Never heard of him.
His name rhymes with...
John Jay? Is
Bon
that what you're saying?
Ray.
I don't think I'm picking up who you're saying here.
He throws hard. He's a guy in AAA. He's pretty good.
Oh, okay. Sounds interesting. Yeah, apparently
we'll talk about him
a
little
John
bit
Gray.
Later.
Let's talk about one Troy Tulowitzki.
Let's
to
talk
start
about how
off
awesome you guys
today.
Have been today.
It has been a solid day on the old Twitter machine for anybody not named Craig Goldstein. And also, like,
Mark
all the members
Kisla.
Of the other stodgy media who just get so furious that fans are actually voting for people on Twitter. I can't even get on Twitter today because this stupid final vote thing. All right, calm down. It's one day of your life, lunatics. Troy Trevor Tulowitzki is up for the final vote for the National League's last All-Star selection. I don't know if he's going to get it. He should get it. I had a dream last night that he got it, but I don't know if he's going to get it.
I honestly think the Rockies have been doing the best job of any of the teams involved in social media in getting their guy to the All-Star game. He
you
probably
mean you're
won't
not
win because it's, you know,
the
it's
Yankees?
The Rockies,
you're...
but we've talked about so much about how awesome the Rockies social media team is. We got to get Julian on the show at some point.
Yeah, that's
really
got
to happen very soon.
We really do.
But I think they've been kicking ass today on Twitter. So we got, at this point right now, we got about 45 minutes left in voting. Obviously, you're not going to be getting this at time. This is not we're time stamping this right now, but that's just how we're going to have to do it. So hopefully by the time you listen to this, Troy Tulowitzki will be an All-Star, joining his infield teammates Nolan Arenado and DJ LeMahieu.
That was pretty awesome.
Yes.
When found out that DJ made it, that was, you know, I didn't think that DJ was going to, I figured maybe DJ would be a final vote guy. I think, you know, first of all,
I didn't even think it would,
I think
that
we
much,
can all agree.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree that the voting's a pretty big scam.
Oh, of course it is.
Omar Infante has a lead of like 2 million votes with 2 weeks left, and then all of a sudden he's voted out of the All-Star game.
Really? And Altuve just so happened to pass him, and yeah.
Just so happened to be Jose Altuve who passed him. But, you know, I mean,
whatever.
Voting is, you know, it's fixed for every All-Star game anywhere, except for when Yao Ming was voted in like 5 years after his career ended by Chinese fans in the NBA.
Allen Iverson,
but,
same way.
Yeah, Allen Iverson, same way. But, you know, I think that what the Rockies benefited from in this circumstance is you got the star to be able to push in the final vote, and you got the guy who's super deserving. He just got in on the player vote, and that is awesome. And I'm super excited for DJ LeMahieu because he really
absolutely
deserved it.
And it's funny, a lot of these players who get in, kind of like Charlie Blackmon last year, where they have the really, really hot start, and that's what players notice, and then probably when they send in their ballots, they're like, oh yeah, I remember that guy was hitting, you know, 400 in the second week of May. And then by that time, they're not anymore when the actual All-Star game hits. But players recognize when a guy has put in his work. DJ won a gold glove last year. He's having a great offensive year. It's not like he's undeserving. It was a huge surprise to me, though, that DJ LeMahieu was voted into the All-Star game. I'm not going to lie. But the other guy's okay.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty good for DJ. That's fantastic.
Cool for
and the other guy is pretty good, Nolan Arenado. He's okay.
Who?
You know, that guy. Olin Arenado. I can't do it with that one, can you?
Never heard of him.
Nolan Arenado still tied for the NL lead and runs batted in with 68. He is fourth in the league in slugging percentage at 601. Behind a few guys who are pretty good, Harper, Goldschmidt, Stanton. You know, those guys are okay.
It's such a bummer that, you know, well, we're not going to see Stanton, we know. Thankfully, Bryce Harper's injury, they thought that leg injury,
right,
the groin thing, was going to be a bigger thing than it was, and it's not, so it looks like Bryce Harper will be there. Matt Holliday, for a while, looked like he wasn't going to be able to play. It looks like he'll be there now. But not seeing Stanton, not being able to have Stanton in the home run derby is such a bummer.
What?
I just want to see Stanton blast baseballs through
a lot of guys don't want to do it, which sucks.
Yeah, true.
I would love to see Nolan do it. He's still,
it's become the dunk
contest. He's still second in baseball in home runs on the road this season with 15. Nelson Cruz just recently passed him. He has 16 now.
You have any plays at Coors Field?
Nothing,
man,
but a Coors Field creation, man.
But, you know, two very, very deserving All-Stars for the Colorado Rockies. And really, I mean, Troy Tulowitzki is a deserving one as well. And if he gets there, that'd be awesome. It'd be a big triumph for the Rockies social media team. If he doesn't, you know, it's a final vote, whatever. I think the Royals are probably just going to get a guy voted into the National League too. So, you know, seems pretty obvious at this point, right?
I wish the Rockies would have teamed up with the Royals, but
I think the
Missouri connection was too much to overcome. Just ask the South.
Oh, look at that. Nice timely work there.
Nice little Missouri compromise joke. That's what you get on the PDP, folks.
Intelligent humor here.
1870s.
Civil War era jokes, man. So, you know, this has got to be a stressful week, but a fun week for the social media crew. And I think more than anything, it's just kind of cool to see the way that an entire group of people gets behind these different little causes. I mean, like, we can't be bothered to worry about real things in 2015 America, so why don't we worry about the final vote? But it's kind of fun. Like, it's fun to watch everybody, you know, be a part of it.
Tulo's got a 21-game hit streak. He's, you know, he's not as powerful as he was last year, but he's hitting .318, you know? He's reached base in, like, 100 straight games or something. I don't know. I don't do numbers. Oh, wait, that's my job. It's fine, though. Troy Tulowitzki is having a much better last, whatever, month, 6 weeks of the season than when he started. So I think it's okay to vote for Troy Tulowitzki for the All-Star game. I think he's a very deserving player. And the same thing with, you know, the Clayton Kershaw thing. Do you want your best players in the All-Star game, or do you want the guys who had the best first 2 months of a season to be in the All-Star game? Like, it's hard to argue that Troy Tulowitzki is not one of the best shortstops in all of baseball. He should be at the All-Star game. Same with Clayton Kershaw. Same with probably Johnny Cueto. I mean, Tulo's hitting .379 over his last 34 games.
It should be
just
like a 30-man roster. You know, like, in all reality.
Yeah.
It's, you know. Although, I guess it's turned into a weird enough thing lately that, you know, I can't get enough people into the All-Star game anyway. Now you got to play it because you got to play to win because the All-Star World Series field advantage relies on, you know, like, all the dumb things anyway. But There are always more deserving guys than there are spots on the All-Star team.
Yeah.
Also, how about the Yankees yesterday on Twitter?
God. Listen, I love everybody tweeting at the Yankees being like, oh, we didn't know you guys were jerks. Come on. Everyone knows the Yankees are the most arrogant bunch of fans in baseball. They're the most elitist fans. And that's fine. They've earned it, whatever.
In sports. Not just in baseball.
They can do their own thing. And they do constantly. Like, if it doesn't happen in the span between, like, you know, 5th Street and 57th, and they don't give a shit. And that's fine. Whatever. They can do that. But I'm not surprised at all that their reaction was, I'm not going to vote for Tulo. I don't even know who he is. Oh, is he coming to the Yankees? Oh, then I maybe vote for him. No.
Yeah, that was it.
Sorry.
That was it. It was the first replies to everything that the Yankees tweeted yesterday were either F the Rockies or does this mean we're trading for him? Not does this mean the Yankees are trading? Does this mean we're trading for him?
Because all those guys have
average,
so much to do.
You know,
yeah.
Exactly. The average chub, fatty guy in the Bronx who's buying a seat in the bleachers and spending $17.95 on a beer is, oh, I got to add a big hand and trade for Tulo. Nah.
Yeah, yeah. They're doing it for you, guy. They're doing it for you, guy in the stands.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. They're annoying. But anyway, you know, it's fun. I like the little final vote thing. It's fun. It's one day of Twitter annoyance. It's not nearly as annoying as that godforsaken face of MLB thing that MLB Network has started doing the last couple of years, where you can vote on Twitter for like weeks at a time. And Jose Bautista must have hired a human being to just spend 24 hours on his Twitter account trying to make him the face of MLB by tweeting and retweeting every single thing that they ever came across that had any tangible connection, even tangentially, to Jose Bautista. But so at least it's not that.
Wait, Jose Bautista doesn't actually like me? He's not actually reading my tweets?
I don't think so. Also, Pinstripe Alley, the Yankees Twitter fan, SB Nation Twitter account yesterday tweeted, quote, the Yankees account has now tweeted 16 times without mention of their partnership with the Rockies on the hashtag Tulo, hashtag Vote Guardy team up. Awkward.
Yep, pretty much.
They were terrible.
Yeah.
And then do you also love how Alex Gordon gets hurt and the Major League Baseball just hands the Yankees that spot?
The final vote.
For Brett Gardner. Listen, Brett Gardner, I don't think, was even like close to the top of the fan vote for the final vote in the American League.
No, but
I think he was third or fourth.
I think Brett Gardner should have been an All-Star. I think his numbers are very, very good.
Yeah, I think
this year.
He's deserving.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
It's just, I think that's what you open yourself up to when you have the final vote is, well, then do you take a fan or do you take a player from that vote and put him in as an injury replacement for somebody, or do you take somebody else because those guys are kind of included in that final vote? I don't know. It just seemed a little strange.
But hopefully by the time you're listening to this, Tulo will have been an All-Star. And it will be because of the phenomenal social media presence of the Colorado Rockies. So, Julian, you guys are working your asses off today. I hope you're listening.
Yep.
And if you are, congratulations. You did all you could.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year, I remember, as soon as the Morneau final vote push came down to the end and he ended up losing to Anthony Rizzo, I got an email from Julian that night about something that I was working on for Rockies Magazine, and he just seemed so exhausted. It was like he'd been running a marathon for 3 days straight, and then it's like, ah. Oh. I almost made it. We almost made it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's been fun.
It's been fun.
Why not? Who cares?
Honestly,
Twitter's dumb anyway. Like,
exactly.
It's not like we're on Twitter because of some serious nonsense. Go vote for your favorite player.
All of our followers have just been phenomenal today. They are kicking ass at all this. You can go down the list of our followers who have now reached over 1,000 real followers.
Well, I know,
which is crazy.
Also,
mostly real, we're pretty sure.
I will say that, when would this have been? The last time we recorded a PDP, a couple of weeks ago, I found a website that lets you like report and block followers easily. So I went through and, you know, reported and blocked the last 1,000 or so of terrible spammy followers that we had gotten from whatever person at the Post presumably bombed us with spam followers. But when I did, I remember we were getting very close to 1,000 before that happened.
Yeah.
We were at like 998 or something like that. Yeah. And then that happened and it screwed us all up, whatever. But then when I went back through and reported a whole bunch of them, we were down to like 967 or something like that.
Yep.
So there's a good chance that I blocked like 20 legitimate followers, and I'm really sorry if I did.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're all listening now because
just
like, oh, wow,
call
they
me Patrick him. Saunders, am I right?
Heyo.
Even the Los Rockies account is knocking it out with the the old Super hashtag. It's just fun. It's the All-Star game is stupid and it's idiotic and, you know, whatever.
Have a great time with it, guys.
Exactly. Have fun with it. So in this edition, episode number 51 of the Purple Dinosaur podcast, we are going to be talking some of the big league club, obviously, but it's been a struggle for the last couple of weeks. But we are super excited for our guest this week, a guy we've wanted to have on, wanted to talk Rockies prospects for a long time, and that is Ryan Parker of Baseball Prospectus, who will join the show here in just a little bit to talk about a wealth of prospects. Parker has seen basically anybody who has come through the South Atlantic League, through the Asheville Tourists over the last few seasons. He's seen, he's graded out. His stuff is at baseballprospectus.com. It's outstanding work. He's one of the best swing evaluators in all of baseball and all the scouting community.
Talk hitting, man.
He's in
the
love
guy.
With Raimel Tapia. He is. He is definitely the guy. He's in love with Raimel Tapia. He gave Tapia the first ever 7 grade that he had ever given to a hitter. Baseball Prospectus' scouting scale is different. It's not the standard 20 to 80 that baseball scouts use. But a 7 grade is like an all-world, all-star, borderline Hall of Famer. That's like how good that tool is. He gave that to Raimel Tapia. David Dahl, he's obviously evaluated. He's seen a lot of these guys come through. So we're going to talk with Ryan Parker coming up in a little bit. And, yeah, what's on tap with you with this all All-Star game stuff. I feel like we should cover that before we head off into the minor league path.
I fly out tomorrow, and I get in on Sunday, and I think we'll be setting up everything on Sunday, so I'll be probably at the ballpark during the Futures game. So I'm going to say, like, hey, guys, no, I need to do some work here. I'm just going to go sit in, like, the second row and just take pictures of Tapia and Trevor Story the whole time. So that's probably what I'm going to do on Sunday. And then Monday, we have a big press conference show. We're getting a lot of interviews, like a five-hour jaunt from 1 to 6 Eastern, I believe, where we're going to be covering the announcements of the starting pitchers, the lineups, getting a bunch of sound from all the All-Stars coming around. I'm sure we'll get stuff from Nolan and DJ and hopefully Tulo, fingers crossed. Then we the Home Run Derby is on ESPN, so we don't care about that because we're with Fox. And then Tuesday, the All-Star game happens, so we're going to be there. Killing it, I'm sure. I think the crew is going to be Kevin Burkhardt, who is one of the best in the biz, Frank Thomas, Pete Rose, and that's all I know for right now. And then Wednesday, I've got the whole day to myself in Cincinnati, so I'm going to just paint that town red, pun intended.
Yeah, what do you do there? Cincinnati, I believe that there is still a piece of...
I'm going to go see the Queen.
I'm going to have to look this up for you. I believe that Crosley Field, I believe there is still a piece of Crosley Field that exists.
In the hearts of every Cincinnatian.
Somewhere in Cincinnati.
In the eyes of every child.
I'll try to find, I don't know why, you know, like nobody else cares about things like that other than me. By the way, I snuck into Granger Stadium.
I know. I saw the pictures. Granger Stadium is the old ballpark in Kinston, North Carolina, where the Kinston Indians used to play. This really historically... old stadium from what, the 1950s, 40s, 50s, even
built in 40s. The 40s. I think it was opened in 47. I want to
and
say.
Honestly, it's too bad that there's not a affiliated team there anymore because Granger Stadium,
and there could be soon. There could be soon
because Granger Stadium is your classic old school Southern ballpark, like what you see in the movie Bull Durham and the kind of that old ballpark was. That's the kind of the feel that Granger Stadium has. And the town really embraced the Indians for a long, long time. You know, bringing in players, hosting them for families. They all came out, supported the team at the ballpark. But then the Indians grabbed got a new affiliate, I think in 2011, 2012. They're the Carolina Mudcats. Now they're back in the CL as the Lynchburg Hillcats. But yeah, if there can be a team coming to Granger Stadium soon, that would be fantastic because Kinston deserves it. They really support
absolutely.
Their baseball, and man, I love it so much.
It's a good segue from I was gonna find old baseball sites for you to see in Cincinnati, but then I realized I think I'm one of like three people who are just super.
No, I wonder what old baseball things I can find in this town. Yeah.
That is what you are.
That's me on vacation,
and you also sound like that.
That is what I sound like. It is what I talk like when I'm not on the podcast. If you meet me in public,
no, it's so nice to meet you.
That's what I generally.
You're like
Jerry
Lewis.
Talk like.
Boy, ladies.
But that'll be cool, though. That'll be a lot of fun. I've never been to an All-Star game. I went to the
Home Run
Derby when I was here in '98, but I've never, in like Fan Fest. But going to a game, that'll be super cool.
I only went to Fan Fest when it was there in '98. I was 12. I went to that and it was fantastic, man.
I wonder if you and I were there at the same time.
We probably were. How weird is that? Weird. My favorite part of FanFest was when it was like the first time they had like the virtual batting and pitching cages where you could like it was like a regular pitching cage, batting cage, but they had a video projection on the screen and you had like a, you know, you could pick like any pitcher you wanted in the big leagues, like Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens, or you could throw to players like Pedro, you know, to like Andrés Galarraga and Larry Walker, where you would like pitch it and they would swing the same way that like where you threw the baseball. It was ludicrous. I was 12 years old. I was like, I struck out Larry Walker on three pitches. I'm sure everybody did. I'm sure it was designed to do that. But like, you know,
I think your stuff is just that good. At
it was good.
The Rockies had Bob Gebhardt there back in the day. Like, maybe we should sign this Masters.
I was a Wyoming All-Star. I'm just saying, as a 12-year-old,
like the whole state.
The whole state. There's only 12 of us. So
I was going to say, there was like only one baseball team, right?
No, but you know, they would have Randy Johnson throwing, and the ball would be released from his release point on the video projection. And so it was like you were hitting off of Randy Johnson. It was crazy.
I remember the very first time I saw, because they had those at Coors Field. They might have just had them after that. Like, maybe they brought them over
after that. I think
they
did, because I think it was, you know, billed as this like brand new technology that no one's ever seen before. It was being introduced during that fan fest. I could be completely wrong on this, but that was the first time I had seen it, and it was one of the coolest things I had ever seen to that point in my entire life.
Those are fun times.
Oh yeah.
We were so innocent back then.
Well, speak for yourself. I was a little anarchist.
You're weird. You're so weird. But All-Star Game, it'll be fun, you know. And congratulations to Nolan. Congratulations to DJ. You know, AAA All-Star Game is coming up. There, I believe, are a couple of topes. Actually, I haven't even checked. I should probably know that, seeing as how I work for MILB.
No, that's not like it's your job or anything.
No, it's, you know, it's not anything that we cover, obviously.
Obviously.
I'll find that. As you tap dance now, then I'll find that. I'll find who is there for both the PCL and the Eastern League, because I know I am virtually certain that Matt McBride made it, but I think that he is the only Isotopes All-Star. And then on the other side, in AA in the Eastern League,
I think they're just expecting John Gray to be with the Rockies at some point, so they don't want to make him a AAA All-Star. But no,
don't vote him in. He's going
to
be going up.
To make many, many phone calls to people if John Gray does not get up to the Rockies very, very soon. And also, while we're at it, while I'm in Cincinnati, I plan to take many, many very creepy photos of Nolan and DJ and hopefully Trevor Story and Raimel Tapia during the Futures game. It's going to be from like those photos you take like from like 150 yards away that you're zooming in all the way on your cell phone, and it's like a little blur. And it's like, oh, look, I'm right here next to Raimel Tapia. And they're like, that could be D. Gordon. I don't know.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, but I'm probably going to do that.
Creeper. By the way, before I ask you the most pivotal question about your trip to Cincinnati,
I will not be eating Skyline Chili.
Note, the Pacific Coast League All-Stars. Okay, that was going to be it. That was really going to be it. So now we know. Matt McBride and also Christian Adames, both named PCL All-Stars. There are a handful of New Britain Rock Cats named to the Eastern League's Eastern Division All-Star rosters. Shane Carl.
Nice. Former Long Beach State dirtbag.
Very familiar. Austin House, another pitcher. Our boy, Tom Murphy, catcher for the New Britain Rockcats, also a member of the Eastern League's Eastern Division All-Star squad. And so those three will represent the Rockies at the Eastern League All-Star game, which is also coming up on Wednesday. So exciting stuff. You're not gonna eat any Skyline Chili, right?
I've had Skyline Chili before. No, I've been to Great American Ballpark before.
I've never been to Cincinnati.
It was back in 2008, my senior year of college. I went to Kenyon College, which is about an hour northeast of Columbus, Ohio. So the drive to Cincinnati was maybe two and a half hours. My buddy and I went to a Rockies Reds game, and this was in 2008 when there was like a weird stretch of time where the Rockies always got screwed over on home run calls, where they would hit a home run, but it would like bounce back into play, and every single time the umpires would rule it a double and the replay would show that it was clearly a home run. And I was at one of those games where Atkins hit one that went off like the flowers and the back railing in left field for a home run off Aaron Harang, and then it bounced back into field of play and they called it a double, and the Rockies, I think, ended up winning the game anyway. But there was a weird stretch in 07 and 08 where that happened to the Rockies constantly, and now with replay that won't happen anymore.
It happened in the wild card tiebreaker
exactly
game. Garrett Atkins hit
one
in
it was Atkins
game
again.
That
was
ruled
I feel like it was always
home run.
Atkins that got screwed over.
Maybe because he had that swing that everybody like watched the ball leave the yard and they were like, there's no way with that swing that ball.
It's crazy. Garrett Atkins, he had some really, really good years.
He really did. And then he turned out a massive contract extension and then he sucked.
Yeah. After he was like the opposite of Max Scherzer.
Yeah, basically. Oh, man. Well, Cincinnati, enjoy it. I expect a ton of pictures. I expect just as many Tapia pictures as you can fit on your
It's going to be great.
That's what I would like. Speaking of Tapia.
Hey, that's a segue.
That was like the perfect segue. Ryan Parker, Baseball Prospectus, joins the show next. We'll talk some Tapia. We'll talk some David Dahl. We'll talk a whole lot of Rockies prospects coming up right now. Really, ever since we started this podcast a year ago, one of the guys who we had very high on our list that we wanted to have on is the guy who joins us right now. Ryan Parker from Baseball Prospectus joins the show for the first time. Welcome, Ryan, driving across the Palmetto State in South Carolina. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Just trying not to crash, but I talked to y'all and get found just talking about Tapia.
Well, that's where we're going to start. First of all, I am very surprised that I remember the state nickname for South Carolina because it's been a while since Anthony and I were there. But second of all, why don't we just dive in with a little Tapia talk? Raimel Tapia, who is a guy that the scouting community is in love with, and I think the rest of the baseball community, the more mainstream community, is really starting to be turned on to as well. Another four-hit performance last night with Class A Advanced Modesto. Last year was in the South Atlantic League, a league that you're very familiar with, being based in Charleston, home of the River Dogs, the low-A affiliate of the New York Yankees. The Asheville Tourists made some stops there. You've seen Tapia there. You've seen him elsewhere. Just give us the Raimel Tapia scouting report from Ryan Parker. You gave him the highest grade that you have ever given a hitter at the time that you wrote up his report for BP. Just tell us about, for the people who don't know Tapia yet, give us your Tapia spiel.
So Tapia is a prospect you're going to see once and not get it, but then the more you watch him, the more it kind of clicks as to what this guy is about. Basically, kind of what I tell folks when they ask, all right, you always said this Tapia guy is special. What makes him special? It's the fact that the middle of his bat and the middle of the baseball are almost magnetic. He can barrel up anything and everything. I've seen him hit some ridiculous pitches, and that's the thing. This is a guy who can naturally hit. It's hard to find, especially at the low levels. You know, he's not an older guy who's feasting on bad pitching, and he's not just a physical freak that's getting by on, you know, just raw bats or anything like that. This is a guy with the actual really solid feel for hitting.
He's only 21 years old, but he has kind of split some of the scouting community. You've always been in his corner, but he does have some unorthodox things that he does with his stance. If people don't know, you know, he's more upright before he gets to two strikes. When he gets two strikes, he crouches down like a little kind of Jeff Bagwell kind of stance. What do you see from him that you absolutely love, and why are some people still not jumping on the Tapia train yet?
Well, a lot of people aren't jumping on the Tapia train just because there physically might not be room, because that is a very narrow train. Talking with some of the actual team last year, I know Tapia ended up being short one bat because he lost a bet on the fact that if he was over or under 165 pounds, and at a solid 162, I think it was. So that, a lot of the reason the guys see that, he doesn't look like your typical kind of uber prospect. At the plate, how he accomplishes it, he's got an extremely wide stance. There's not, he has very small kind of subtle moves just to kind of get the bat going. And once he does, this is the guy you have to see him multiple times, because sometimes you'll watch him in BP and it's a day when he's going to work on hitting nothing but 180-foot line drive to left field. Or he's sitting there kind of serving, you know, serving him up. Other days he'll cut it loose, and those are fun when he starts kind of getting his back leg. He's got some sneaky power, but this is a guy you're not going to go and watch him. Like, you could go watch a guy last year, Javier Baez. You could go watch him once, and he might do something ridiculous. You're like, okay, this kid, you know, swings harder than a Ferrari and makes the ball not land. With Tapia, it's a little more kind of, you have to watch it several times to kind of really appreciate what skills he brings to the table.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, 34 extra base hits this year in 81 games, including 8 homers. And Modesto, not really a hitter's park. The Cal League is. Modesto is not really. But I think some of the knock on him so far has been that maybe this isn't going to translate to higher levels. But we've seen whenever he's been promoted, he's been able to just continually rake in those leagues. In his last 25 games, he's hitting .373 with an OPS over .930. He has 14 multi-hit games in that time. I mean, why are people not thinking that he can translate at higher levels yet?
One, like you talked about, it looks a little weird. The two-strike thing throws people off. He really kind of minimizes his stance, gets really wide, almost cuts the strike zone in half, but it looks different. The other thing, you can go watch something. There are times when, like, his bat and ball skills are incredible, but it's a little frustrating when here's Jimmy Singh, and the most part knows he can hit everything, when he'll get 2-0 and all of a sudden, you know, he's trying to go get one in the dirt. Like, wait a second. You've got to have a little more of an approach than that. That's where I think some people will get thrown off. First, that's my biggest hang-up on about anything is that he's got to show. He doesn't necessarily have to walk a ton, but you can't be chipping away at that by, you know, being ahead in the count and getting a decent but not, you know, center cut pitch and just, you know, kind of bailing the pitcher out.
Ryan's report, by the way, you can find at baseballprospectus.com, and there's a lot of praise for Tapia in there, obviously. The ETA, kind of, Ryan, that you laid on him as far as the timeline goes, is a major league debut possibly in 2016, and eventually his realistic role, first division regular / all-star. If you think Tapia hits his ceiling, how far does he go? I mean, what is his level? Because, you know, people here are going to be used to comparing somebody to Carlos Gonzalez or Larry Walker or whoever it is, but what do you think the realistic expectation is for Raimel Tapia, the major leaguer, as that comes over the next year or 2 years?
So, Tapia, if he can hit his ceiling, which, you know, handful of prospects ever do, this is a guy who should sit kind of comfortably over 300 with some, you know, with some surprising power. One comp that you might go with, this is a guy who has, you know, kind of incredible basketball feel, almost that kind of a Howie Kendrick type. Very different frames, you know, very different kind of stances and swing patterns, but just from a, you know, statistical point, you're looking at that. He might have a little bit more with the bat, a couple ticks higher batting average-wise because the stroke is a little bit smoother. Kendrick's always been a guy who's kind of rough getting to the ball. But this is a guy I like who I think will hit over 300, but like I said, a lot of that's going to come not from, you know, gaining ability to hit the ball, but learning how to, you know, work his approach and kind of manipulate bats into his favor, not giving them away.
Last thing on top of you here, he is leading the California League in hits right now with 111, hitting .320 on the year. Ryan, let's shift a little bit to David Dahl. You saw this guy play a little bit last year in Asheville. You saw what he was doing early this season with Double A New Britain, just dominating the league, having, you know, after a little bit of a slow start. He was really ready to, you know, make that next step as a prospect. And then the freak accident, the spleen injury, gets his spleen removed so he can start playing again. He's already played 2 games with short season Boise right now, trying to come back for this season. What did you see from David Dahl last year that you think he could be such a special player?
David could be an incredibly special player, and the reason he gets knocked is for reasons outside his control. He has the freak hamstring injury, which that you guys have ran into that and to come back from that. But then how in the world can you knock a prospect because he got his spleen like knocked out of his body? I think David is gonna be a guy who's gonna have a chance to probably have above average grade in both hitting and power. He might be a little bit coarse field aided. You know, he hit 320 there. I think it's very possible for him. He's also just a ridiculous athlete, but it shows up in weird ways because he's incredible in center field, but it's not that he makes these, you know, four center diving plays and stuff. It's he'll make this catch and then you'll realize how good it is until he's been jogging back to the dugout for 45 seconds because he caught it on the other end of the park. He can just go and get balls in center field.
When you see a tandem like this between these two guys with what Tapia brings offensively and what Dahl brings kind of as the entire package, so many people around here, I mean, it's a football town. The especially the mainstream sports media in Denver doesn't really get how player development works, all that kind of stuff. But this seems like, from our vantage point, a couple of guys who have worked in the minor leagues, it seems like two of the higher tier talents that the Rockies have developed in pretty recent memory. I mean, really since probably the World Series year and maybe a little bit before. Does it kind of strike you guys that way right now, that these two are as good as advertised? I mean, they are gems that you could probably put up against virtually anybody else's top two, especially outfield prospects in other systems.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great 1-2 combo to have. Kind of, I think, why they're a little bit under-recognized nationally is neither one of them are going to be big-time power guys, and that's always a draw. So with the Twins, you know, you had Buxton and Sano, and, you know, you had Buxton just Mr. All-Everything, and then you had Sano, you know, the guy who's hitting balls into different zip codes. So it's easy for people to, you know, turn on YouTube and see Sano hit a 500-foot homer and be impressed by that. It's a little different if you're going to stretch together, like, man, look at Tapia get these two-strike hits the other way. That's not as big of a sell to the national audience.
That's a good point.
Sure.
Very productive.
I mean, what's another player in the Rockies system that you have seen so far? And you probably saw a lot of Ryan McMahon last year when you were in Asheville. Is there anybody else that you've seen in the Rockies system in terms of the hitting prospects that we might be able to maybe see on a more national stage next year? Obviously, Trevor Story is coming up to the Futures game in the next couple of weeks, or I guess on Sunday, as well as Tapia. But is there anybody else that caught your eye while you were scouting some of the Rockies hitters?
So, Rockies hitters, Forrest Wall is going to be an insanely good guy.
Yes.
Right now, the stats aren't great, but this is a kid coming off, I think, I believe he came coming off injury in high school shortly after he was drafted. So, you have a guy who missed some time in high school coming into pro ball, and I guarantee you he's been in the holy shit, we're still playing phase for the last month or so. At the start of the season, when I would kind of go and talk to other scouts about Wall, you know, if a guy's just okay, you know, they'll give you some info on him. Wall, they wouldn't drop anything on him. So that tells you something in and of itself right there.
Ryan, when you look at the way that young guys like that come in and start developing, especially for, you know, like you said, a kid who came off an injury and had surgery, Forrest Wall, in high school, Brendan Rodgers is a guy who's going to go through that same road now and was a, kind of the consensus top talent in the draft. The Rockies got him at third overall. But the issue for high school kids, you get out of a, you know, 30, 40 game season, whatever it is in high school, and then you jump into this pro season, all of a sudden it's 140 games, it's every single day, you're doing it for 6 months out of your year, basically, not necessarily in terms of what Rodgers will go through because he's in a short season league, but what is the indicator for you guys in the scouting community of guys who handle that transition well? Can you see something in a player maybe in August or later on in a season that shows you that he's getting it, that he's acclimating well? Or on the flip side of that, can you see things that, like, man, this guy is really struggling to handle this transition?
Well, for that, for the stuff in August, you almost have to put down a stat sheet because you know he's, you know, especially a young high school guy, going to be dragging a little bit at that time of the year. With, for me, with hitters, I'm looking at, are they still willing at that point to work on stuff that late in the season? You know, is BP them going through the motion? Are they kind of, you know, going, getting their swings in, talking to the coach, still trying to get that much better? That's huge for me. As far as kind of good indicators, look for, they're going to slump at some point or another during their first full season, and that very well might be kind of the first slump of their lives as baseball players. A lot of these high school kids, you know, they don't know what it's like to, you know, to not hit 400. So just to see how they handle that is kind of a big tell for me.
Yeah, Ryan, especially on Twitter, if anybody follows you, which you all should, at R.A. Parker, by all means, please go follow me. You're one of the most preeminent and outspoken hitting gurus on the internet right now. And obviously the Rockies have had a lot of issues in terms of hitting on the road, especially in their franchise history. In your opinion, if you can break it down, I know it's probably a much larger question than this, but what do you think the biggest difference is and why they've been so great at Coors historically and struggled so mightily on the road? Is it an approach thing, or is it something that's physical?
Oh, I don't think it's necessarily an approach thing. It's a little bit of a physical and a little bit of a mental thing, but kind of in a very specific way. So physically, the balls break differently at Coors Field. You know, you're not going to see a stuff that has that same kind of exploding bite to it. Just because, you know, with being so high up kind of elevation, the ball really has something to grab into and break if it's a breaking ball or kind of born on your hand if it's too thin. So Rockies, they have a long home stand, and then they got to go on the road. And oh, shit, big league pitching is really good. So they got to adjust that on the fly. And so same thing, let's say as a hitter, you know, you're feeling good about your swing. You have a home stand, you hit a couple out, and then you go on the road and you feel your hitting balls just as well. And it's like, man, I'm getting real familiar with this warning track. It's just, you gotta have to prep yourself that these are two, you know, literally two different playing fields, and need to handle them accordingly.
He is Ryan Parker, Baseball Prospectus. You can find him on Twitter at RA_Parker, and you can read his stuff as well on Baseball Prospectus. It's some of the best scouting stuff you're ever going to read, not just on swings, but just period. So go check that out. Go check out his evaluation of Tapia from last year, because it will, I mean, maybe do it when you have the ability to, like, sit down and have a blanket, maybe, because it could be uncomfortable to do in a public place, depending on how much you love Tapia's hit tool.
Don't come in here, Mom. I'm
also
busy.
Also, I didn't mean to use hit tool there, which sounded really Freudian and suggestive, but whatever. Ryan, we cannot thank you enough, man. This has been a whole ton of fun for us to get a chance to talk to you about some of these guys. And, you know, if it's cool with you, we'll just have like a regular Tapia conversation now every season.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, guys. I know y'all put up with my ridiculous schedule trying to get me on here, so I appreciate the patience, and I'm glad I finally got a chance to talk to y'all.
Man, we loved it. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank y'all.
That was awesome.
Ryan Parker, man. Good stuff.
Fantastic, Ryan Parker. And he didn't get into an accident while we were on the phone with him. So
I was worried about
kept him on the phone for like
the entire
25
time.
Minutes after our phone call, after our on PDP segment ended, we just talked for like another half hour.
Yeah.
So that was great, man. He's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Parker.
And going to coach. How cool would it be to have Ryan Parker be coaching your like high school team?
Man, it's a bunch of really good hitters on that team, I'd imagine.
Yeah, seriously. They just win every game 14-13. Like the mid-90s Rockies. So it is our final segment of episode number 51 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And we're going to talk a little bit of John Gray. We're not going to hammer on the John Gray subject because
we've done it a lot.
We did that for a whole lot of weeks. And nowadays it's just kind of getting frustrating and sad. But last time out for John Gray, first win since June 5th. Hashtag pitcher wins. 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 8 strikeouts, and 2 walks. In 4 of his last 5 outings, John Gray has struck out at least 8 batters after not having done that once all season leading into 4 out of his last 5 outings. And again, looking great. Still not getting the call. Now, I will say 2 things. One, Nick Groke's story, which we're going to discuss from Sunday, was really, really good and was a very interesting look into kind of the mindset right now in the Rockies clubhouse of why we have this kid, he's dominating in AAA, why is he not up here yet? 2, Thomas Harding, the Rockies beat writer, did tweet the other day that he would be very surprised if John Gray did not debut in San Diego after the All-Star break.
Right.
So that is the most, that is the closest indicator to John Gray's debut maybe being imminent that we've had the entire season.
His last 13 starts, John Gray's allowed 3 runs or less in 12 of them. 67 punch-outs, 25 walks, and 78 and two-thirds in that time. The league hitting .252 off him. Mind you, a very good hitter's league in the Pacific Coast League as well. So John Gray's time needs to be very, very soon. If they want to wait till after the All-Star break, whatever. That's fine. But clearly, from Nick Groke's piece, there are people in that Rockies clubhouse right now that are very skeptical of how things are being run in the front office right now. Under the subheadline, Tulo prefers promotions, there was a lot of really eye-opening quotes here from the Rockies' hopeful All-Star, which maybe we'll find out if he's actually made the All-Star team here in a few minutes.
Wouldn't that be fun?
But that'd be great. So here's some of the choice quotes from Tulo here. Start with the top. There are a collection of Cy Youngs in this division. This actually from Walt Weiss. If you've got a horse on the mound, you can beat anybody. Now to Tulo. I'm a believer that good pitching beats good hitting. There are a lot of good pitchers in this league. They're getting even better with velocity and scouting reports, so it's making our job as hitters more difficult. I don't know if you can outslug teams anymore like the days of the Blake Street Bombers. If somebody asked me about young pitchers and if they're ready or not, I would rush everybody to the big leagues because velocity plays. Stuff plays. Sometimes a guy gets to the big leagues and that urgency and that work ethic, they know they have to bring it on a nightly basis and it makes them better. But I would not waste bullets in the minor leagues. Get them here and see what happens. And if they can't stay here, then they go down and make adjustments, but at least let them learn and get it done, hopefully at this level, instead of grinding and grinding in the minors.
Pretty big words.
That's as much of an authority on the subject as you're going to get right there. Velocity plays. Stuff plays. The Rockies fans or the Rockies front office will bring up the Eddie Butler case. Maybe they rushed him a little bit too quickly. Who knows? Every guy is a little bit different. Maybe they wanted to get Eddie some more starts in AAA. Obviously, it might have benefited him. Who knows? That's all hindsight. Maybe the problem is Eddie Butler did have that velocity back in 2013. He had that stuff back in 2013. And maybe it was a mandate by the Rockies front office that maybe he tries to get away from that stuff and that velocity that he has, try to sink the ball and make it, you know, a 90-mile-an-hour sinker instead of a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. And maybe it kind of screwed him up a little bit. Maybe we saw that with John Gray a little bit last year in AA. Because right now what we're seeing from John Gray over the last five starts, as you mentioned, the strikeouts and the swings and misses are coming along. The velocity is back with his fastball. It's up in the mid-90s and above. The slider's been wiped out. Chris Jackson, our friend from the Albuquerque Isotopes beat writer down there in the queue, he's saying the changeup this year has not been an issue, and the slider has been a lot better. The fastball's great, getting swings and misses. What else is there to see?
I don't know, and not only do I not know, it doesn't appear that anybody outside of Jeff Breidich and maybe Zach Wilson knows at this point, because even Walt Weiss said, quote, at some point, especially if we're in striking distance, yeah, you want to use all your weapons.
Which
absolutely.
They're not, but that's
no.
Beside the point.
Right, and then in the question to is it too early for John Gray, he said, quote, no, I don't think it's early. Like, what? Even your manager is saying, like, well, we got him there, and he's succeeding. Jeff Breidich did say in this story, quote, John Gray is doing a great job right now of learning lessons and evolving at the AAA level, so there are things that he needs to do and will continue to do, and we'll continue to exercise patience with him. It's certainly on the radar. It's not lost on anybody. Everybody is well aware of it. This in reference to the struggles in the rotation. We're going to continue to work with them and make sure they understand how to make the adjustments. But at this point, like, you're past the Super 2 deadline. You know, like, we're not worried about the contract issues from the first part of the season as it pertained to service time and an extra year of arbitration. Like, it's July now. What is he still learning? What are these lessons?
You're 12 games out of first place in the division, 10 and a half games out in the wild card. You've won 3 of your last 10 games. You've won 4 of your last 13. Your pitching has not been good. You lost 2 pitchers last night, basically. Kyle Kendrick threw 1 inning, got stopped by the rain. David Hale came in, who was supposed to start tonight, and he got hurt. And Rockies still have no posted starting pitcher, I believe. We're sitting here at 2:20 Mountain Time, and the Rockies...
going to be Johnny Holstaff.
The Rockies don't know who they're starting tonight. John Gray, I think his scheduled day to pitch for Albuquerque would be Sunday.
Yeah, he pitched on Tuesday there. So, correct. The Rockies do, by the way, not have a starter listed for today's game, which is starting in 4.5
hours. Now, they have Chad Bettis set to go on Sunday, Jorge De La Rosa on Saturday. And like I said, right now they have nobody to go to.
Somebody in the clubhouse clearly knows that they're starting, but like...
What more do you have to see? What more? What does he have to do? What more do you have to see at all from John Gray to give him a chance? You can say, we talked to a little bit, our buddy Justin Taylor on Twitter, and I guess follower of the PDP, and he made a good point. He's saying the Rockies may be shook. They may be shook considering what's happened to pitching prospects of them in the past with Drew Pomerantz, with Alex White, with Eddie Butler, when they were supposed to be highly touted. Tyler Matzek. I mean, Matzek had a good year last year, obviously, but you know they've seen what has happened to their supposedly big-time prospect pitchers when they've been called up, and they have seen lately especially the results have not been anywhere near acceptable. And so maybe they're worried. But and he you know, Justin pointed out that I think Thomas Harding came back with something when he was talking to him on Twitter saying, you know, maybe how does he handle the bat or whatever. You know, they're looking at some things that they want to keep him down, and that's kind of a ridiculous statement. I mean, I don't know if they're looking for they want John Gray to be 97 Clemens on the mound and 0-1 Hampton at the plate before they call him up. That's not going to happen. What prospect has ever had zero questions about him when they brought him up to the big leagues for the first time?
Well, and the thing that's weird, too, is the Rockies seem to have tried to change the entire type of prospect that John Gray is anyway. I mean, John Gray in Oklahoma was this fire-breathing power pitcher, and when the Rockies got him to pro ball, they said, all right, tone down the fastball a little bit, learn how to throw a changeup. And it's not really the guy who John Gray was. It's not the guy who got him drafted. And we had this conversation last episode, too. There is so often this weird obsession with Major League Baseball organizations. This is not, this is certainly not a Rocky-specific problem. But teams, and this is sport-wide. This isn't just in baseball. But teams take a guy and go, you know, we really like what you did in college or in high school or whatever it is. I think you're a fantastic addition for us, for this organization, for the future. Now we're going to reteach you everything that you know how to do.
Paging Arizona
Diamondbacks. Why not just try to enhance what he does? Right.
Trevor Bauer, Tuki Toussaint.
I don't get it. I will say one thing. The Rockies are under zero obligation to lay out to the fans or to the media or to whomever the developmental platforms, the benchmarks, the things that they want John Gray to hit. Maybe there is something that John Gray is working on that we don't know about. Maybe there is a certain issue that the Rockies really need to see, a key indicator that they want to see hit before they promote him to the major leagues. They're under zero obligation. Zach Wilson, Jeff Breidich, those guys, they don't have to tell Nick Groke. They don't have to tell anybody anything about it. But to continue to just vaguely say, oh, there's things he needs to do, well, I think at this point, don't people deserve maybe an inkling into what exactly that is? Because everything else seems to indicate that he's ready, and he has been for a month.
It's been since May 1st. What we talked about before, the bad April was the severe outlier for John Gray.
Very much so.
It doesn't make any sense. Any sense at all why he's still down there.
I'm going to offer my theory on this, and I have heard from people who may have some knowledge of the situation inside the organization that I think, and this is something that we had talked about a little bit beforehand, I think this is more about, like we said, dangling the carrot of AAA dominance in front of a guy like Gray, in front of a guy like Eddie Butler, who has started to kind of turn things around in AAA as well, and get them ready for 2016, where it's like the monkeys in the movie 28 Days Later. Just like fill them with rage and dominance and then turn them loose. Right? I know. I'm very good with the random 2000s movie references. But just like if that's what it is, if it's about learning how to be a leader in a front-end rotation starter, learning how to go out with that attitude of I am going to shove, I am going to dominate every opposing hitter that I see every single 5 days. If that's what it is, that's as close to
acceptable
a logical explanation for this as I can come up with, because it doesn't seem to be mechanical. It doesn't seem to be with stuff. It's certainly not with results. So that's all
and,
I can
and
think
I don't
of.
Think mental either with for Gray. For Eddie, because he got kicked around a little bit at the big league level, and he had a couple of rough starts with some walks in his initial starts, but lately he has been coming on. So if it's that, I don't understand. Yeah, I think if that is the case, then I think that's probably the most logical explanation. They want to make sure that they are dominant every time they go out, and they want to get used to winning. Basically, it's kind of what we've talked about this before, but what the Royals did with their core group of guys throughout the minor leagues, Moustakas, the Hosmer, they always brought those guys up together, and whenever those guys went to every level they went, they won the title, or at least were a winning team in, all through the minor leagues, and then they got to the big leagues, took them a couple of years, but then eventually they've reached that point where, they're used to winning again, and they're going to keep winning. The Rockies, to an extent, have done that with the recent minor league teams, with the Asheville club last year. They've kind of kept most of that together at Modesto. They've thrown a couple guys to New Britain here and there. But if that's what you want to do to build that winning culture, I can see that a little bit, because the Rockies in their organization don't have a lot of winning culture, and they haven't for quite a while. So if that's what they're trying to do, and you know, some kind of ineffable thing where they want to say, you can be a winner in this organization, just follow these steps and trust the plan, fine. Breidich has been at the helm for 8-9 months now. Eventually, it's going to be enough where we have enough of a sample size of his tenure to make some assumptions on what the hell we think he's doing.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know. It's been...
If he's not up by August 1st, there's a real, real problem
here. Which I think is what we said about June 1st and then July 1st.
And July 1st. And... Oh, yeah, of course we did. We just keep pushing it back.
Yep.
Because there's always reasons to keep somebody down. Like, you know, Chris Bryant had to work on his defense for 8 days.
Right, exactly. Exactly. You know, and that I think that's the thing that is probably most baffling about this entire situation with Gray is it's not a money issue. And with this organization, it's always a money issue. And so that's what I think has been very confusing. But, you know.
Well, listen,
whatever.
We don't need to belabor that. I think the Rockies have done well enough with their salary cap, well, not salary cap, with their salary and their payroll for the market they are. Like, they're in the middle of the road. They're like, you know, 15th or 16th in payroll this year. I don't have the number right in front of me, but it's middle of the road. And for Denver's a middle of the road sized sports town, I think that's fine. I don't think the problem is the amount of payroll the Rockies have. I think the problem has always come to the allocation of the amount of payroll the Rockies have had.
2016, it's getting difficult to wait for 2016 because 2015 at times had such fun stretches, but now it's like you look at, you know, the last couple of weeks and it feels like that stretch in May where it was just like lifeless
death,
boring, ugly
where it was
baseball.
Just you know? Awful.
Yeah,
death.
It's just terrible. And that's how it's felt recently. And those are such frustrating and annoying stretches in a baseball season. And you know, I mean, there are brighter days ahead. 2016 with the arrival of Dahl, eventually with the arrival of Tapia, with whatever happens, whether it's at the trade deadline or over the offseason with Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez, if the Rockies do make a move.
Or with the trade deadline coming up in 21
exactly.
days. The trade deadline is 3 weeks from today.
You know, I think there are some things to continue to look at as positives, but it definitely does make when it's July 10th and you're already talking about like, oh, well, you know, what are they? When is this guy coming up and when is this guy going to be traded? You're already packing it into that offseason mode. Then it's kind of frustrating.
Yep.
It is frustrating.
So on that note,
but, you know, we'll just bye. Wrap up on how frustrated we are. You know, you can check us out on the old Twitter machine at Purple Dinocast. We need your music, as always, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. If you know a musician, if you are a musician, send us your tunes to be included on this week's show. And again, we are going to be played out today on episode number 51. I already forgot the guy that we named the episode after.
Luther Hackman, man. Come on.
Luther Hackman.
Gene's brother.
The Luther Hackman Memorial Edition of the podcast. Doves and Wolves will play us out with their song Arkansas. Again, you can find out more about Doves and Wolves at dovesandwolves.com. And big thanks to those guys for getting in touch today and sending us some music for this edition of the show. Actually, we're going to let them play us out with the song Grindstone. So you can find Doves and Wolves at dovesandwolves.com. You can find the PDP on Purple Row and on ESPNDenver.com. Big thanks to those guys for getting us always up and running every week. You can follow Anthony on Twitter. He's at Master Tones. He'll be posting stuff from the All-Star game coming up over the weekend. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Tyler Mon. I'll be posting things about random minor leaguers from coast to coast. And also probably my rants about, you know, if an alternate Nebraska football uniform gets released this week. That's about all. Rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher as well. And
buy our shirts, too.
Oh, yeah, buy our shirts. And we did send in a ton of new ideas to Humble Monsters. So as soon as the Rockies are out of contention and you are frustrated with baseball, then we'll try to pull you back in and make you buy some more merchandise.
And as soon
Tyler
gets back from his Midwestern tour with his band, The Lawsuit Models.
It should be Middle Eastern tour.
As soon as he gets back, tromping around, globe traveling.
Tromping around Beirut.
Globe trotting. Globe traveling.
Globe traveling. He travels globes.
Travels globes. Why not? But yeah, when Tyler gets back, and we're going to knock out some awesome new shirt designs, and we'll have them for you guys. And,
gonna be super.
Until next week, have fun at the All-Star game, buddy.
I will, man.
Should be awesome.
Should be.
Next week, you'll give us a breakdown. Pete Rose will join the show. Also.
You will not.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
On the ground. No mystery.
I agree.
All right.
Is it on Fox Network, Fox?
It is on Big Fox, yeah. Okay. I think the...
Because I get that, but yeah. I don't get
Fox. You don't get FS1? Okay, because I think the...
I don't even have cable anymore.
Like, the show yesterday, or the show on Monday is going to be on FS1.
Okay.
Gotcha. Because that is a... it's like just like the press conference show. You know, we interview the managers, and Burkhart and Frank Thomas are there, and we're there for like 5 hours.
That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess, like, say the Renaissance, downtown Cincy, all by myself in a king-size bed.
Hey.
I know.
That'll be cool, though, staying in a Renaissance downtown by yourself. Just order room service. Just be like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone 2.